وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Western European countries, including the continent's powerhouses, Germany, France, and the UK, have been facing mass protests and strikes against a host of economic problems over the past year. Ordinary people are suffering under record inflation rates and high cost of living that was triggered by an economic war with Russia over the Ukraine conflict. And now Eastern Europe is being impacted by the consequences of the war in Ukraine as well. Farmers in the eastern countries of the Green Continent are angry as their unsold products are just piling up, and for that, they blame an influx of Ukrainian grain imports. What are the reasons for these economic woes, and what should Europe do to alleviate the problems of its citizens? Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Esha Krishnami, podcaster and journalist, joining us from St. Petersburg. And political economy researcher and analyst Clive Menzies joining us from the British capital, London. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's start off with Ms. Krishnaswamy. Why do the inflation numbers keep climbing and climbing in the Eurozone? The high inflation and rising interest rates have already led to a spike in business closures across the 27-nation EU.
Well, I mean, that is the purpose of the Eurozone, is to take monetary policy away from the national governments and put it in a central, for a central authority. And for obviously, for the lack of better reason, the inflation is rising because none of these national governments have the power to control and set prices for a whole host of things that are within the European carbon market. So that's kind of why. But of course, there's the other issue of gas prices rising and the Europe not having an alternative from what they used to do was import from Russia. So there's a it's a two-pronged problem, and it's unlikely to have drastic solutions given the current framework of the European Union.
All right, Clive Menzies in London. Let's talk about Europe's largest economy, Germany. There have been numerous strikes across the board. Germany's rail transport, as we speak, is at a standstill with workers going on strike nationwide to demand higher wages. That's the latest in industrial action in Germany as the cost of living crisis there is biting. The German economy also experienced a period of stagnation, rounding up last year. Are Germany's troubles putting a mark on the record inflation across the Eurozone?
Well, I think this is a much bigger issue than just what's happening in Germany. It's happening globally in those economies where the money supply has been expanded and expanded and expanded ever since 2008. Inflation is structural. Yes, there are contributory factors such as the EU shooting itself in the foot by imposing sanctions on Russia, but they're marginal. The wholesale gas prices are actually much lower than reflected at the petrol pumps in the UK, for example. So, yes, that is a contributory factor, but the primary driver of this is money supply, and we predicted hyperinflation in 2015. We saw the trajectory of where we are going. Last July, Andrew Bailey, the patsy at the Bank of England, announced that they were going to keep inflation for 2% per annum. that was a ludicrous claim then. It's even more ludicrous today, because we're in the position of rampant inflation. If you look at previous cycles, this is where plunder takes place. So under the cover of inflation, there are all sorts of scams going on where you're paying a hell of a lot more. Farmers are being paid less for their produce, and yet food prices are going up. The official figures mean nothing. This is plunder. And the reason that we have strikes is that people are beginning to wake up to the way they're being abused. They imagine that by striking, they're going to solve this. They're not. Basically, they have to recognize that this structure is criminal and it's abusing and plundering their resources and energy.
Sure. Ms. Krishnaswamy, the discontent with the economic situation is evident all over Europe. Workers from different sectors in the UK have been staging strikes over the past year, causing disruptions to public services. The workers there, of course, they want better pay to cope with inflation, which remains at record highs. There's also the massive demonstrations in France against the poor working conditions and against the unpopular pension reforms, which by many accounts are being called flat-out austerity measures. Unpack for us the trouble that the major European economies are going through right now.
Well, I mean, it is definitely, it is the crisis of, it is a sovereign debt crisis, and it is also the fact that they're not growing and they're stagnating. So their economies are designed to have constant growth, and in order for them to have constant growth, they need to keep having new industries. But in the past 5 to 10 years, most of these European Union countries have not been able to sustain new industries. So because their economic model depends on constant growth and they have been unable to deliver that, it tends to hit the bottom of the population, people with the least power. And that's where the austerity measures hit too, the hardest. And that is kind of the belt tightening part of the economy. And unfortunately, until they redesign the economy to be less dependent on constant growth, or perhaps have a more diversified economy, it is unlikely to change given this trajectory.
Clive Menzies, looking at the threat of a full-blown recession in Europe, if the freefall continues, will the ECB, the European Central Bank, be under pressure to act?
Well, I think we're heading into a significant economic crisis which goes way beyond recession. I think we're talking more like depression, unless we, as your other guest suggested, decide to reorganize the way in which we operate. I mean, in addition to the plunder through inflation of the money supply, we've also seen the COVID scam, the amount of money being poured into Ukraine, which is more or less a criminal state. The money, the arms are being resold. A lot of the contracts are being scammed or scalped for the benefit of those people running Ukraine. And then, of course, we have the green agenda, which is imposing taxes and charges on people that are wholly unjustified because the science doesn't stand up. But in terms of how we deal with this, this is all driven by our current structure, which is framed by money. We look at everything through the medium of money, and we may not have time to go into it now, but where the money, where the value actually is, what is valuable to humans is are their needs and capacities and the links between them. And that's what these companies like Amazon, Apple, Google, Facebook, all of these companies are making huge amounts of money out of that data. What we need is a different way of organizing ourselves, our relationships and our transactions using data in an open source distributed way, rather than relying on these criminal institutions, which just harvest all the wealth we create. And it goes to the very few at the top. And the middle classes are probably the least in the position to recognize the abuse that they're being subjected to, whereas those further down the social order very much know how they're being abused. And it's about time those people who think they're relatively well off realize that this system is actually leading them into an economic disaster.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, do you think that Europe blindly followed the U.S. in its response to Russia? Many would say that America took the steering wheel and Europe just followed suit without really anticipating the damage following the sanctions on Russia, which we're seeing now, have resulted in unbearable high energy production, transportation, and rental costs. In terms of Europe, I think it's safe to say that the sanctions have already backfired.
Well, it's more that Europe, since the end of the Western Europe, since the end of World War II, has not actually been sovereign. This was the entire plan with the Marshall Plan and the setup of the Bretton Woods Institute. So Europe has always been in lockstep with the U.S. in every foreign policy. So it's not as much as they blindly followed, as much as their leaders are not designed to stand up to the U.S. And the U.S. has military bases still in Germany. Even after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there are bases in Hungary, Romania. And on top of it, the U.S. uses color revolutions and funds lots of these independent media organizations in order to kind of poison the well. So they are there as designed. And so I wouldn't say that they're blindly following. They're just not able to realize their interests and the interests of their people and stop with their collusion with U.S. foreign policy, which they've done almost every single day since the Second World War.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
To stay with you, Ms. Krishnaswamy, there's another variable added here to the equation. Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, most recently Bulgaria, they've introduced temporary bans on Ukrainian grain imports and other agricultural products to protect their markets from an influx of cheaper Ukrainian supply. Now, that decision came after a slump in prices triggered protests from local farmers. The EU has been pressed here. The talks that they were leading to lift those bans, that also failed. So with a Black Sea grain initiative basically up in the air, the outlook for exports looks increasingly bleak here. Talk to us about that situation.
Well, Slovakia also cited that there was a dangerous pesticide within the grains that had an examination of the grains. They found that there was a dangerous level of pesticide that is not legal in Slovakia, and that's why they claim to have halted the imports. But yes, when you flood, and that is the entire way of deregulation, is that when you flood the markets with extremely cheap grain, of course, the local farmers suffer. And of course, in England, this is exactly what happened in the 1970s and 1980s when Miss Margaret Thatcher decided to join the common market, where they actually literally had to like destroy boats of fishermen. So it is a same old story. And yes, but of course, there's also a question of safety and what kind of fertilizers are being used within these grains imported from Ukraine.
Sure. Clive Manzese, the EU has run into a serious energy crisis as a result of the face-off with Russia, with a hike in gas and electricity prices, adding further to the rising cost of living. Now, analysts believe the full scope of the energy crisis and gas shortage is yet to hit Europe. What happens to the economies of the Eurozone countries then?
Well, it was predictable way back in May when this all started, the sanctions. And I wouldn't say it's the US driving this. This is the people who control all the levers of power, including the US. Your average politician hasn't a clue as to what's going on. And if they have, they're being manipulated and told what together to do, irrespective. So in terms of what happens from here on, basically, we are seeing a transition which is probably not very visible to mainstream media because they choose to ignore it, is that increasingly across the world, people, or across the Western world particularly, people are beginning to take responsibility. They're developing their own networks for all sorts of things, including food. They've not yet managed to do that for energy. But this whole green agenda is going to backfire, because it is ludicrous to expect us to transition to what they so call renewables. In actual fact, they classify hydrocarbons as fossil fuels, which, again, is another myth. So I think what happens from here is that people are going to wake up. The structures are going to start to fall apart. The people that we've traditionally relied on to guide and lead us will be visibly exposed as just corrupt, basically, and not working on in our interests. And increasingly, people is going to devolve to distributed autonomous organization. And the internet will play a very big part in that. And the crucial part of that scenario is that people are going to find ways other than money in which to build relationships for transactions and to fulfill their needs and satisfy their capacities. So we're going through a seismic shift which will look nothing like ever we've seen before, because the age of plunder that we've lived through for the last 2,500 odd years is now coming to an end. But that won't be visible for some time yet. But certainly I see it around me locally on the ground, that people are increasingly relying less and less on government. They're not paying taxes. They're not paying parking charges. They're turning their back on these structures that just harvest their resources.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, on the same issue that our guest in London was just mentioning, what kind of long-term effects are we looking at, not just for Europe, but for the global economy? A while back, the World Bank and the U.S. Central Bank, they warned of the repercussions of the conflict in Ukraine. Unpack that for us.
Well, one thing that we've noticed with India, China, Iran, now Venezuela and Nicaragua, is that people understand the danger of having the entire World Bank, IMF, international trade hegemony being dictated by the U.S. dollar. So there is going to be more of a de-dollarization effort. Now certain Gulf countries have joined. So now a lot of trade is being happening with a mix of yuans and rubles. And so this means that U.S., which has long relied on not actually creating actual tangible goods, but merely on their dollar hegemony for imports, will no longer be able to do it. And this also means that many countries, recently Tunisia wants to be a member of BRICS and they've rejected the IMF loan, will not be able to be dictated with the IMF structural adjustment programs. And so they will, for the first time, be able to determine their own destiny and determine what kind of life they want for their people without the boot of the IMF on their neck. So that is what I see. And of course, most of the commerce I see is moving away from Europe into Asia, thanks to China's Belt and Road Initiative. And of course, it should, because majority of the world lives in Asia. So I think it is more of an egalitarian shift, where one country or one entity like the IMF, World Bank, cannot dictate to the world the structural adjustment programs. They cannot privatize everything. And it will definitely allow people to be able to control their own resources better.
Clive Menzies in London. We've been talking about problems. Now let's talk about solutions. So what do you believe are the solutions in the short term and in the long run?
The biggest solution is for people to actually learn for themselves what's really going on, because most of the media has been lying to them consistently. And the only way to do that is in collaboration with other people to form networks on which you can rely that are built on human trust. Once people begin to understand that, they will understand that rather than using the current structures, there are far better ways to use the technology and resources that we have today in an open source manner. The open source movement created the internet, which is one of the most sophisticated and challenging projects in the world. And your smartphone and all the technology you use, most of that has come from open source distributed organization. And that is the way the economy will grow. And that is the solution for people to realize that they cannot abdicate responsibility morally or financially or in any other way to these institutions, because they're there to serve the structure. They're not to serve the people. And when people realize that and take responsibility for themselves and each other and learn how the world really works, as opposed to the cartoon caricature that we see on mainstream media most of the time, once they realize that, then all of these structures and those that don't actually subscribe to reality will wither on the vine. People won't be interested, because the things that will work will be self-organizing and very effective, a bit like the internet. The fact that the internet has been colonized by these behemoths is only because of the existence of money. Once we create open source data, then money will have no value. The business, we look at everything through the value of money at the moment, and money bears no relationship to what we, men, women of all ages, need. And that's what we have the capacity to do, to have the data available to us to satisfy each other's needs and capacities, and to form trusted relationships with people anywhere in the world. I've been doing this in terms of our research for the last 10, 12 years. And it's the other people who have contributed to my understanding. This is not my own original work. This is many, many people working on this, and it's taking shape.
Let's get a final word in from our guest in St. Petersburg, Ms. Krishnaswamy. We've been talking about all the difficulties that European economies are facing right now. Let's talk about solutions as well. What are the solutions, in your opinion, in the short term and also in the long run?
Definitely, for the European Union, the biggest problem is the euro. It's like a one-way track to austerity, deregulation. It takes away the democracy and the voice of the people for a central authority. So until and unless there's a radical shift in the structure of the European Union, it's unlikely to change. So it's incumbent upon the people to look at their countries and figure out a way to get their national governments not to hand over their monetary sovereignty. And it's a one-way track. Once you get on the EU zone, you cannot go back to the lira. You cannot go back to the drachma. You're just stuck, and you have to impose their austerities. And that's going to lead to more and more poverty and more crises that are going to come more frequently. So until and unless they have a radical change in the European Union structure, it's just going to continue on this one-way track.
All right. Thanks a lot. Podcaster and journalist Esha Krishnaswamy joining us from St. Petersburg. And also thanks to a political economy research and analyst Clive Menzies joining us from the British capital, London. And thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now, and see you next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing these verses of Chapter Shu'ara. Dear listeners, now let's listen to 214th, 215th, 16th, and 217th verses of the chapter.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وأنذر عشيرتك الأقربين.
And warn, O Muhammad, your closest kindred.
واخفض جناحك لمن اتبعك من المؤمنين.
And lower your wing to those who follow you of the believers.
فإن عصوك فقل إني بريء مما تعملون.
And if they disobey you, then say, indeed, I am dissociated from what you are doing.
وتوكل على العزيز الرحيم.
And rely upon the exalted in might, the merciful.
Regarding these verses, dear listeners, we said that in order to start a vast revolutionary program, it is evident that it must begin with smaller and more condensed rings. So, at first, the Holy Prophet had to prepare himself. The Holy Quran addressed him, فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ. First, you have to believe in monotheism yourself. And then, أَنذِرْ عَشِيرَتَكَ الْأَقْرَبِينَ. So start your invitation from this small group. So it was better for the Prophet ﷺ to begin his first call with his relations, who knew both his pure background more than others, and love of his close relation with them required that they hearken to his word more than others, because they, comparing with the others, were further from jealousies, enmities, and taking a kind of defensive position. By the way, according to what has been recorded in the Islamic histories, the third year of his embassy, the Prophet of Islam sallallahu was commissioned to convey this call. For until then, the call was being achieved hiddenly, and only a few people had embraced Islam. But now it was time for the obvious invitation. But when this verse and this verse that says وَخْفِضْ جَنَاحَكَ لِمَنِ اتَّبَعَكَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, when these verses were sent down, the Prophet ﷺ was commissioned to announce this call manifestly and to begin it first with his own nearest relations. The Holy Quran elsewhere says, therefore declare openly what you are bidden and turn you away from the polytheists.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So the Holy Quran, after ordering the Prophet to go to invite people, goes on to talk about the manner of conveying and warning, and it really explains briefly. وَخْفِضْ جَنَاحَكَ لِمَنِ اتَّبَعَكَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ Lower your wing, be humble to the believer who follows you. The interesting point in this verse, dear listeners, is that if you want to be considered from among the ones who believe in the Almighty Allah, you have to obey the Holy Prophet. Because the verse could have said, وَخْفِضْ جَنَاحَكَ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ It could have said, lower your wing to the believers. But the verse, interestingly, says, لِمَنِ اتَّبَعَكَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ In fact, it is defining the true mu'min. Who is the true mu'min? The true mu'min, the true believer, is the one who follows you. So, if you want to be considered from among the believers, if you want to be considered from among the monotheists, you have to obey the Holy Prophet. وَخْفِضْ جَنَاحَكَ لِمَنِ اتَّبَعَكَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ So, the Holy Prophet invited his close relations to Abu Talib's house. On that day, they were 40 people, and among the Prophet's uncles, only Abu Talib, Hamza, and Abu Lahab attended the meeting. After having the food, when the Prophet ﷺ wanted to fulfill his duty and convey his call, Abu Lahab took the initiative and disturbed the situation by his sayings. So the Prophet ﷺ invited them again for food on the following day. So he did not stop after the invitation was disturbed. He moved on and invited them once again. أنذر عشيرتك الأقربين واخفض جناحك لمن اتبعك من المؤمنين. So he was still humble even after the invitation session was disturbed. We will be continuing with the commentary of these verses, God willing, in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always, but for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Eid al-Fitr, or the festival of breaking the fast, which marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan, is celebrated in Afghanistan like all other Muslim countries. The joyful event has a special place in Islam.
Eid al-Fitr is a gift from God. As our Prophet has said, my Ummah has two joyful events in a year. On this day, the Islamic tradition is to wear neat clothes and perfume, then go to mosque and participate in Eid prayer, which is performed in collective form to bring more unity and equality among Muslims. I'm so happy to come here today and congratulate all Muslims on this Eid.
People prepare for the Eid several days ahead by buying sweets and pastry. On Eid al-Fitr day, people celebrate the Eid by visiting relatives.
Now that the prayer is done, people usually pray for their loved ones who aren't alive. Then people visit their relatives and celebrate the Eid by eating foods.
Eid al-Fitr isn't just a day for joy, but also a day to take care of the poor. Zakat al-Fitr is an amount of money paid to the poor by heads of the families in Muslim countries.
The ones who have financial ability are obligated to pay the Zakat al-Fitr in Islam. They should give the money to the poor, orphans, widows, and other people in need. This money is usually paid to the poor relatives of the payer.
In Muslim countries, depending on the location, the sighting of the crescent moon that determines Eid al-Fitr varies. Therefore, this year some countries declared Friday as Eid al-Fitr, while in some other nations Saturday is the Eid. After a month of abstinence from eating and drinking from dawn to dusk, Muslims regard Eid al-Fitr as a heavenly gift. That is why fasting is forbidden on Eid al-Fitr. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
The International Organization for Migration, a UN body, says more than 20,000 refugees have drowned in the central Mediterranean since 2014 whilst trying to reach the EU. This year, in January, February and March, 441 have perished.
We currently let people die in the Mediterranean. We let them die by ordering container ships and fisher boats to stand by and wait. We let them die by criminalizing and jailing those who want to pull them out of the water.
The EU's asylum policy has been slated during a debate in the European Parliament.
The UN recently concluded that the Libyan Coast Guard, which is heavily funded by the EU, is deeply involved in slavery, sexual exploitation, human trafficking, detention and torture of migrants.
The EU is paying billions of euro to Turkey and Libya to manage refugee flows. Campaigners say detention centres in Libya are particularly bad.
The conditions there are horrible. They are defined as hell. We have witnesses of people who were able to escape that, and the stories are just horrible, really. And slavery, raped, forced labour, I cannot just go on.
Western powers have been accused of relentlessly causing refugee crises. They're now being urged to deal with the root causes.
Basically, that means ending wars and interference. It means ending neocolonial policies and plundering. It means ensuring that states are independent. It means we support less developed countries.
The Italian government has declared a state of emergency because 31,000 refugees have arrived into the country since January. During the debate, the point was made that 1 million Ukrainian refugees have arrived into another EU nation, Poland, with no state of emergency declared. The question has been asked, is it the case that those arriving into Italy simply have the wrong coloured skin for EU authorities? Jerome Hughes, the European Parliament, Brussels.
Okay.
Iran's defense ministry has made mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones to Iran's army in a ceremony attended by Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Gharayi Ashtiani, as well as the commanders of different divisions of the Iranian army. With the goal of increasing the power of the drone fleet of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, 200 new indigenously built drones were delivered to the ground force, the navy, the air force, and the air defense force. Minister of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics of Iran hailed the country's advances in drone production, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence.
The more powerful the Islamic Republic's deterrent power, the better it can help countries that seek security and stability in the region. Certainly, Iran can help them because its military prowess has contributed to providing peace and stability in the region, and the drones that were delivered to the armed forces today are part of the country's defensive power. This trend will continue.
Iranian experts have made giant strides in boosting defense power by producing various equipment, including different types of drones. Iran's drone program has become a significant deterrent in the region due to the country's ability to conduct combat and reconnaissance missions using these UAVs. Also, Iran's army commander, Major General Abdurrahim Mousavi, highlighted the growing power of the drones used by army units.
With different ranges, sizes, and weights, these drones can perform all kinds of missions for the Islamic Republic of Iran's army. The experience of using drones in new battlefields has shown that they have a significant and decisive effect. This enables the Iranian army to have the upper hand in the battlefield.
The Navy will have a drone range of 2,000 kilometers with the addition of these drones to its fleet. This means that our operational radius will increase significantly. And in addition, due to capabilities of the drones, we can stalk and hunt subsurface targets such as submarines.
The ground forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army itself is a manufacturer of UAVs. We built drones in different scales, from large to small, that can have strategic effects on the battlefield. In general, drones are a unique and effective weapon and can improve our country's combat power.
There has been very good cooperation with the Defense Ministry. We do appreciate all their efforts. These are operational drones that will definitely be effective in improving the operational power of the Air Force. We plan to use UAVs and planes with a single central command to engage targets.
The delivery of 200 new drones to the Army is part of an agreement with the Defense Ministry on the promotion of drone power and the equipment carried by the unmanned military aircraft. Last year, the Iranian Defense Ministry and the Army signed a strategic agreement. On their phase one of the agreement, the Defense Ministry has undertaken to equip the Army with 1,000 drones.
It is clear that greater cooperation between China and friendly nations is making many Western leaders nervous. Analysts say U.S. dominance is being eroded and a new world order is taking shape. The subject of EU-China relations has just been debated in the European Parliament.
The Chinese Communist Party's actions have now caught up with its stated ambitions and the hardening of China's overall strategic posture over the last years.
A clear majority in the European Parliament claim Moscow and Beijing have malign ambitions.
Russia and China have the same goal, to destroy the development of the democratic world, because democracy is a threat to both regimes.
There are those, however, who warn against provoking China.
First, you led us into conflict with Russia because it's in the interests of the USA. You forced us to buy more expensive gas from the United States. Now you are pushing us into confrontation with China because the US sees China as a threat to its world dominance.
Western leaders always turn to sanctions when they disagree with a foreign government, but they are personally insulated from the impact. Experts point out.
They are well paid. Do they feel the blowback of the sanctions? Do they know what is going on in the shops? Do they know that people like you and me are constantly overcharged with all kinds of goods?
A number of lawmakers are urging EU leaders not to follow the US down a destructive path.
US financial capital wants to make profits in China and in Europe. And driving a wedge between the EU and China is a good way of going about it for them.
Trade between the EU and China is currently valued at 2.3 billion euro per day. According to many economists, ordinary EU citizens will pay a huge price if the 27-country bloc falls into line with the anti-China agenda that is being developed and promoted by the United States. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
At a rate of 6%, inflation in France is still at its worst since the 1980s. However, new data shows that all-important food prices continue to push to unseen levels, having leapt a whopping 16% since last year.
I'm a shopkeeper, but I also grow wheat and raise cattle. So I can tell you that those who are raising their prices the most are the big corporations. The small producers suffered and tried for a long time not to raise their prices. But now everyone is raising their prices. For example, chicken is up 30% this year.
From April through June, there will be price caps on certain goods, following last month's acceptance by major retailers and middlemen of a government initiative. It's expected to cost them hundreds of millions of euros. However, many say they can afford it. Ever-increasing corporate profits have been the norm across Europe since 2009. And in the post-COVID world, many analysts say that corporate price gouging, government-approved speculation, and stockholder profit hoarding are the hidden driver of Europe's high prices.
Il faut prendre des mesures autoritaires.
We must take authoritarian measures. There's simply no other way. We must implement price controls, the indexing of wages to prices, and much more. But a government must have the will to do such things. And that takes us back to the necessity of choosing an alternative political path than our current model.
Polls show that 96% of France agrees with the statement that some suppliers are opportunistically taking advantage of inflation.
Opportunism aside, the soaring prices are the enduring result of the West's failed sanctions campaign against Russia over the long-term unrest in the Ukraine. Instead of sowing peace and reaping low prices, the European Union is finding that belligerence backfires, and especially for the average person. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Israel's atrocities against Palestinians have intensified during the holy month of Ramadan, including the recent savage attack on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The regime in Tel Aviv has been condemned in the European Parliament.
We haven't as much as sanctioned them in any way. We have occupied territories where we import products from. We have sent no signals to Israel that we condemn what they are doing.
Compared to previous debates on the subject, it appears more and more EU legislators are willing to call Israel out.
We see growing violence, expansion plans for illegal settlements, a de facto annexation turning into a covert de jure annexation, daily discrimination against Palestinians, demolitions.
It is clear that the regime still enjoys much support in the European Parliament.
To be honest, I feel strong sympathy with Israel.
However, many EU lawmakers express support for protesters who have been taking to the streets of Israel in huge numbers.
The Prime Minister has to guarantee that hate speech against political opponents and extremist positions expressed by cabinet ministers do not further encourage a circle of violence.
Campaigners suggest regime members are currently under pressure like never before.
The Zionist entity is in a serious crisis, mainly because of the Palestinian resistance, but also because of the resistance in the region, from Iran to Iraq to Al-Yemen to Lebanon, and also Palestinians' diaspora.
It's claimed anyone with a mobile phone who criticizes Israeli authorities is now a potential target.
The Pegasus spyware developed and distributed by an Israeli company is being widely used to target human rights defenders, journalists and political opponents across the world, including in our union.
Despite the obvious challenges, rights campaigners remain optimistic. They insist it's not a matter of if Palestinians will ever see freedom, liberation and victory, but when. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The price of a month's worth of rent in the British capital has soared by an average of more than 16% over the past year, with the average rent price reaching a record $2,910 a month, the highest in the country. In other big cities, such as in Manchester, it's gone up to more than 20%, and in Birmingham, more than 17%. Alex, who asked not to be identified, shared a house in West London with his partner and another couple for 2 years, but had to move when the rent skyrocketed.
The contract that we originally had was 3 years with a two-year break clause. Our original contract state being £2,800 a month, but we had an email from our landlord stating that it's going to be increased to 4,000, which I think is a little over 40%.
Property experts say higher mortgage interest rates and taxation are forcing landlords to either increase the rent or withdraw their properties from the market, sending renters fighting over available properties.
It's really not a good time for tenants and renters in general. We've seen that any one property will have multiple offers. Just recently, we did a viewing on a flat, two-bedroom flat in Ruislip, West London, where we did 14 viewings and we have 14 offers.
But what is the reason behind the increase in demand? A housing deficit is one reason. Britain has a backlog of 4.3 million homes that are missing from the national housing market, as they were never built. Another is a rise in net migration.
Now that's because of Ukraine, refugees coming in from there. It's also because of the situation with Hong Kong and because of the increases in the numbers of international students coming into the UK as well. Now, with these groups of people, they tend to move into places like London or big cities like Birmingham or Manchester.
Calls for a rent freeze are growing, but that is yet to happen. And pressures on the rental market are not expected to ease anytime soon. Saeed Pariza, London.
Iran has marked its National Army Day, with forces from all units of armed forces holding parades in major cities, including the capital, Tehran. Combat units of the army, helicopters, fighter jets, air defense systems, and portable naval equipment took part in the parades. Also, indigenously developed military equipment, including drones and missiles, were displayed. Addressing the event, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi hailed the achievements made by Iran's armed forces, saying any threat to Iran's security will get quick and powerful response.
The Iranian armed forces ensure security not only for their own country, but for the entire region. The Iranian army is now equipped with state-of-the-art technologies to defend territorial integrity. The extra-regional and American forces should leave the region as soon as possible because it is in their own interests and in the interests of the region. The enemy, especially the Zionist regime, have received this message that the slightest move against the country will evoke a severe response from the armed forces and will be accompanied by the destruction of Haifa and Tel Aviv.
Iranian military experts and technicians have in recent years made great headways in manufacturing a broad range of equipment, making the armed forces self-sufficient in the arms sphere.
The army has been furnished with new weaponry, equipment and technologies that are necessary for fighting the contemporary wars and appropriate for the possible wars of future. The Iranian armed forces are now able to fight off any power intending to violate the country's territories, commit an act of aggression, or upset the balance of power.
Iran maintains that its military power poses no threat to the regional countries, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. The National Army Day, which is celebrated annually on April 18th, was named by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, back in 1979.
The latest achievements displayed by different units of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran were only part of Iran's military might, which has been made possible thanks to the efforts of Iranian engineers and specialists. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
On Palestinian Prisoners' Day, marked every April 17th, protesters in Paris demanded an end to Western silence regarding Israel's horrific and illegal treatment of political prisoners. Since 1948, an estimated 1 million Palestinians have been arrested by Israelis due to waging an average of 10 police raids every single day. Israel arrests about 6,000 adults and 1,000 children annually. A new report revealed that 5,000 Palestinians are currently held in long-term Israeli prisons, including almost 200 children. More than 1,000 people have not even been charged with an alleged crime. Prisoners report that physical and psychological torture is not just routine, but shockingly brutal, and hundreds of Palestinians have died in Israeli custody. Many accuse the international community and Western-led human rights groups of abandoning those ensnared in Israeli occupation prisons.
The image of Israel is getting worse and worse with each passing day. What some don't seem to grasp is that Israel is a colonial project, and all of modern human history shows that the colonialists are the guilty ones, and not those who are colonized. The only choice Israel has is to stop its attempt to colonize Palestine.
Europe's longest-serving political prisoner is a pro-Palestinian resistance fighter held in France, Georges Ibrahim Abdullah, who has become lionized as the Arab Nelson Mandela. Abdullah still refuses to recant his support for Palestine, and his continued imprisonment is widely viewed as a flagrant politicization of France's legal system.
The mistreatment and unjust incarceration of Georges Abdullah shows how France is directly involved in today's Middle Eastern politics. Releasing Abdullah back to Lebanon would threaten French imperialist and political interests in the region, and also those of its allies in the United States and Israel. Abdullah is a hero worldwide, and we insist on his immediate parole, which was initially granted over 20 years ago.
In neighboring Germany, protests in favor of Palestinian Prisoners' Day were banned. The Israeli occupation means that Palestinians endure terrorist tactics every single day. The brutality is even worse for those political prisoners stuck in Israeli jails. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah.
One of the major objectives of the Holy Prophet's mission had been to undertake a struggle against oppressors and exploiting powers. God's blessing and peace be upon the Holy Prophet Muhammad, who rose against pagans and oppressors alone and hoisted the flag of unity in the favor of the poor. He did not fear the lack of forces or the limited number of his companions while he had no military equipment.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Welcome to the Spring of the Truth from Arab English Radio. Today we're again with you with another statement of the late leader of the Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. Imam Khomeini in a statement said that the leader and the ruler of the Islamic Ummah and the head of the Islamic State does not fear anything including the people, because he is not a traitor. He himself is from the people, and he himself is inside the masses of the nation. Dear brothers and sisters, again we see